Dennis Packham, reel 5. When did you return to the UK after that particular tour of duty?
In February of 1953.
And you've been in the Navy for?
Since.
14 years nearly, that's
well,
it.
Since September 1939, yeah.
So you must be coming towards the end of your...
I was coming towards the end of it.
Service.
I should have actually came out of the Navy in February. I should have come home and come out of the Navy. But because of the Korean crisis, everybody in the Navy had another 6 months put on their tour of duty. So I didn't come out of the Navy until the September of that year, although I didn't go anywhere. I was in Chatham on shore duties.
So you came back, what sort of duties were you doing at Chatham?
Well, at Chatham I went over to Mary's Island and I maintained huge banks of batteries which degaussed submarines. Now, most of degaussing gear on ships, our cables laid on the inside of it, and the degaussing equipment is meant to counter the magnetic mines. But submarines didn't have this facility, they didn't have the cables, so we had to what we call wipe them. So a submarine would come alongside, we'd take cables to the side of the ship, and I had to get about 18 or 20 sailors from Chatham Barracks. It sounds a bit antiquated, but this was the way it was done. It was lowered on ropes down the side of the submarine while I shoved the breaker on the batteries and sent a huge current round the submarine side, one side and then the other, to degauss them, so that when they went out they were protected from magnetic mines. And for nearly 6 months I was on that duty. And there was two lieutenants, and they were getting on in life as well, two quite, at the end of their careers, let's say, like I was. There was two lieutenants and me. We were the only people on the duty.
And you were a leading torpedo man?
I was a LEM at the time, yes.
And do you saw your family?
Pardon?
Were they based in Chatham too?
My family?
Yes.
No, they lived here in Maidstone. But I was able to get lots of leave, night leave. And my two officers were very kind to me. I used to go home practically every weekend. Well, I did. They used to let me go every weekend from Friday to Monday. So I had a pretty soft life from then on. I mean, I was the only member of their crew, and I had two officers in charge of me, if you like. But they were very good to me, and I used to go home very frequently for weekend leave and night leave.
Did you ever go out on any submarines?
Not operational. I had been in one, but not on operation duty, and didn't like it very much.
Did the Navy assist you in any way in adjusting to civilian life? Did they send you any courses?
Yes,
or any options?
Yeah, there were options in Chatham itself, but I didn't have very much of that. I can't remember having any courses, no. I had lots of literature and places you could go to in Chatham and talk to people about civilian life, because it was a big change. But I'd so set my heart on coming out of the Navy, not going on. I was given the opportunity, I must say this, when I was in Singapore, before I came back from Jessa, the Christmas before I came out, I could have come home for the Christmas before I came back in the February, provided I accepted a course in HMS Collingwood at Fareham, which was about a 12-month course in electrics. If I passed it at the end of that time, I would have been a chief petty officer. But the snag was, I would have to sign on for the other 10 years. So it was a bit of a carrot, as I saw it. And I'd made up my mind firmly that I was coming out of the Navy and going to, you know, start another career in civil life. And in answer to your question, yes, it was difficult to adjust. People weren't the same. I mean, I was used to either giving or taking orders, and my life was being sorted out for me, if you like. It was a matter of routine, and you had to adjust routines. Whereas civilian life, you've got to be in charge of your own life and your own working conditions. And so there's some differences, yes.
Because you've been effectively under naval discipline since you were 14.
Since I was 14 years old. That's right. And used to being given orders and taking orders and et cetera, et cetera.
Can you remember your last few days in the Navy?
My last few days in the Navy. Well, I was still at St. Mary's Island with these two lieutenants, And I worked right up to the last minute over there. I didn't do anything particularly different, and I was sent to somewhere in Dorking to get my demob suit, which was quite hideous, and civilian clothes to come out with.
What did that consist of?
Well, it comprised of a brown suit with herringbone things in it. even those days were old-fashioned. A trilby hat, shirts, underclothes, I think another pair of slacks, shoes, which I quickly adjusted to get my own eventually, because you stuck out like a sore thumb in demob clothes anyway.
Anything else about your leaving the Navy, the actual process of leaving?
Well, I picked up certain medals that I was due, you know, campaign medals, and was presented with those before I left. No going away party or anything like that. No, it's just a matter of picking up my stuff from Dorking when I've got these civilians and getting on the train and going home.
Do you think, were you satisfied with the way you were treated by the Navy during the leaving process?
Probably not. My mind was so fixed on coming out of the Navy that I didn't really think of anything else. I didn't think whether they'd done well by me or not. But looking back, probably not. Probably there should have been a bit more sort of sentiment in it. I'd say, you know, thank you for all these years you've served in the Navy, etc. But there was nothing like that.
What did you do after you left?
When I came out, I was due for a month's leave, which I took part of. And then I joined an electrical firm here in Mason called Wrights to do electrical wiring, mainly in factories. But there wasn't very much future in it. It was a job that I was in and I was going to stay in, as I saw it, for the rest of my life. So I applied to go on post office telephones, as they were called then. There was no vacancies at the time I applied, so I did the best part of 18 months, a year, 18 months with Wrights. Then out of the blue, I got a letter to go to this place for an interview with the post office telephones. At the time, I had misgivings about it because I was earning more money with Wrights than I was going to get at post office telephones. But I weighed up the conditions and I thought, here in front of me is a career where I'm not in a career in my present job. And I decided to take it, and I'm very, very pleased I did, because I never looked back from then. Because during my time in what became British Telecom, I went on 21 courses in all. All over the country, Edinburgh, places like that. I took a number of civilian guilds examinations, and when I retired in 1987, after 33 years, I was a manager in BT. So I look back and think, some of those times at the Mercury, I've profited from through sort of leadership, if you like, which helped me to get on in management in civilian life.
I'm going to ask you actually what aspects of the Navy do you think helped you in civilian life, and how did the difficulties that you talked about earlier on in adjusting actually manifest themselves?
Well, to go to your first question, I think that the leadership part of it is because I was used to discipline and used to controlling personnel, which eventually came to my lot in British Telecom. I controlled personnel. And I think I knew how to treat people and use discipline if it was necessary. But to adjust, yes, I felt like a fish out of water to start with. Knocking up conduit and putting wires through some machine. It was a very sort of non-entity job and boring. And I saw no future in it. And this is what led me to apply for something like post office telephones, later become British Telecom. And I really think some of my training in the Navy, and especially at the Mercury, through discipline and leadership and that sort of thing, helped me to become what I eventually retired as. So looking back, I've really no regrets on going into the Navy, because it took me around lots of parts of the world that clearly I would have never have seen or been to had I not gone in the Navy or stayed a civilian all my life. It opened my eyes to the way people lived in other countries, because it wasn't all the glossier brochures that people go on holiday nowadays. But I saw the real places. I saw the back streets of Bombay and places like that, where there were some horrific things to see. And when they talk about things on the television, I know what they're talking about. I know the places now. The thing on television and in brochures, the thing that's missing, is the smell. You can't smell it. Go to some of these places abroad, it's terrific. It's horrific. I remember when we first went to Bombay, I went onto the upper deck and we were, I think, 6 miles out to sea, could see the Bombay buildings in the... And there was a stench, indescribable stench, coming because there was an offshore wind. And it was blowing the smell of Bombay out to us. I'd never have believed things like that were, you know, could happen. Remember going to Durban in the first place, seeing the skyscrapers on the horizon and the lights, because back home everything was a blackout, everything was rationed. It was like going into another world. Times like that, you know, I recall most of the good times rather than the bad times. I think we all do, don't we? We think about the good times we've had and the things that have done us some good. And my mind was broadened by going around the world, there's no doubt about that. I've seen all sorts of nations. The only place I didn't go to, really, was North America. Well, I went to Canada, but I didn't go to the States. I'd have liked to have gone to the West Indies, perhaps. But I went to all the other continents. I went to every continent in the world, and many, many countries in those continents. I've one very good friend, Sam, who lives in Australia now, and we communicate quite often. He's been able to see us from Australia, but I've never gone that way. He lives in Sydney, and we were in the Zephyr together. A chap by the name of Sam Drivers. And so we keep in touch, and we both got sad stories to tell about our wives' illnesses and that sort of thing. But yes, he's the main one I've kept in touch with. I've made some minor acquaintance with some of the others, but not once I come out of the Navy, I come into another life. I was married, we had a daughter. Subsequently, we had more children as time went on.
Anyone from the Suffolk? Because you were on the Suffolk for some time. I know, yes. The crew changed a lot.
Well, the people that I know from the Suffolk, I belong to the Suffolk Association. And I have met up with them. I met when it was first formed in London. Some people up there. Some I recognised, and some recognised me, but others I didn't recognise at all. And the only means I've got, we get a regular newsprint come out from Suffolk Association, and that's a bit about the only means I have. They do have dinners quite away from this place. I think the last one was down in Bournemouth, but because of my wife's illness, I've never been able to go.
I just think, any memories of serving with these people? I mean, you mentioned one, Alfred.
Alf Neil. Well, unfortunately, I've never met up with Alf Neil since the war. He didn't appear at the Bismarck anniversary. He hasn't belonged. I belong to the Russian Convoy Club. He's not a member of that. He was about 6 years older than me. I can only believe that he's probably passed on, because nobody. In fact, when I went to the Imperial War Museum, the chap that was running the show came down the steps and greeted me and introduced me to some people and said, "Had I heard anything from Alf Neil?" Because he would have been a prize sort of witness to what went on. In fact, he got the DSM for his for what he did. But no, I hadn't, and nor had anybody else.
I just wonder if you remember any stories about people at the time. Any officers that were particularly memorable?
At that particular time at the Bismarck.
I say from the Suffolk because you were on the Suffolk for quite a long time.
No, apart from what I've said about the association and some of our memories, most of them that I met in London were on the Suffolk in the second half of our tour of duty, and that was in the Far East.
Any stories about them you remember anyway? What was the happiest ship that you served on?
That's difficult. Because of the time I spent on it, I suppose it had to be the Suffolk. But there were some good times and bad times, but it was over a period of 4.5 years. So I suppose I would have to say the Suffolk. Although I wasn't unhappy on the other ships. I mean, soon welded in with the rest of the ship's company and made friends.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is what makes for a happy ship. Not just your experiences, but the morale of the crew in general.
Well, what makes for a happy ship? It starts from the top, really, the way it's run, from the captain down. We had a very severe captain to start with on the Suffolk, and good for him. It was right in the time of war that he should be so. But he was very strict, and this was passed right down to people like me. The second period, we had a Captain Shelley, and he was a completely different Captain Fish. He was almost like a fatherly figure to us. For instance, if we were going into action, he would come on to the broadcast and say a little prayer for our survival for the next day and things like that. Nothing like Captain Ellis, who was so severe. So I think a lot of the happiness of a ship stems down from the top and how they run things.
Which do you think worked better, the tough discipline or the more avuncular?
Well, no, that's a good question, because I think the tough discipline held us in good stead in rough times in the north, in the Arctic, when we were in action at times, from time to time with the Germans. I think the tough discipline showed itself there. The less or relaxed discipline that we had in the Far East, there wasn't so much action anyway. It was more going from one port to another to pick up a convoy or to do a patrol. And we didn't see all that much action with the Japanese. So Captain Shelley's idea of running the ship suited the conditions and the leave we had in South Africa, my meeting up with my people in Australia, going ashore in Colombo and Bombay and other places, made that quite happy, yes. And of course, it all rotates around the weather. If you're in a bad place like the Arctic, with bad weather most of the time, cold, wet, miserable, and compare that with the tropic where you're shirtless and just a pair of shorts. I've got a picture of me writing a letter home in one of those. It's a different atmosphere, and that makes for a happier ship, yes. Those conditions.
Thank you.